So, Berto, have you seen the new movie Get Out by Jordan Peele? Have you seen that movie in the theater?
Yes, I did, and I'm still traumatized.
Well, that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about the psychology of that movie, because I think it's very interesting. What do you say?
Oh, let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I am chair of the Couple and Family Therapy Program at Antioch University, Seattle, and I'm also a licensed therapist.
My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I'm in the Depeche Mode cover band.
You're going to see them, the cover band. You're going to see yourself tomorrow.
Well, I'm going to see the cover band that I'm in a cover band of.
Oh, right.
It's like, I don't like Depeche Mode, but I like this cover band of Depeche Mode. So we cover them.
Right. Well, I'm actually going to Depeche Mode later this year. Looking forward to that.
I need to try to buy tickets tomorrow.
I know. One of our favorite bands, which makes us old people. What on Rotten Tomatoes do you think that, or do you know this answer?
Well, I know that initially it got 100, and then this one dude knocked it down to 99. Yeah. I don't know if it's still at 99.
Yep, 99. What about Metacritic? What score on Metacritic? Just take a guess.
Oh, 8.
8?
9.
No, it's out of 100.
Okay.
Wow, that'd be strange.
95.
83.
So that's a lot lower, actually.
What budget do you think this movie had?
Oh, I heard someone told me this. It was in the single-digit millions.
Yeah, 5 million. How much has that made on the box office
so far? In the double-digit millions.
Yeah, almost 100 million.
Oh, almost 100.
Yeah, and it's only been out, three or four weeks or something.
Oh, my God. That's a great return.
Yeah, totally. Jordan Peele. I mean, I could imagine that they would have thought that this movie would, make 20 million.
Yeah.
Because, Keanu had...
Which I didn't see.
Wasn't made by Jordan Peele, but had Key and Peele in it.
Okay.
And it was okay. You know, you would think you would think Key and Peele making a movie, it would just be, 1,000 laughs because their show is so funny.
Right.
But it was, it was okay. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't great. Anyway, this movie was made by Jordan Peele. Of Key and Peele. Jordan Peele was born in New York City. His mother is white. His father is black. He is recently married to comedian Chelsea Peretti, who is a hilarious comedian person. They're expecting their first child in early 2017 here.
Oh.
He's 38 years old. He got a start in Second City in Chicago, which I've been to.
A lot of people got their start. A lot of great comedians got their start in Second City in Chicago.
Totally. Then he was on, do you know what his main TV show he was on early in his career?
Wasn't he on Mad TV?
Yeah, he was on Mad TV late in the run, but in 2003 he joined Mad TV. And when he joined, he was one of the funniest.
I didn't watch it religiously, but I remember seeing him on it.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll go down a rabbit hole on YouTube and just watch old Mad TV with Jordan Peele.
You're now watching Mad TV.
The interesting thing is Jordan Peele back then was super thin, and he would do a lot of skits without his shirt on, and he looks just completely different.
By the way, do you know you have pirates on your carpet?
They kind of look like monkeys to me.
So if you look at them this way, they're like pirate skulls with their little pirate hats and sort of like feather beards.
I think they look like monkey with pirate hats. Then he was on Key and Peele in 2012, which won an Emmy for Outstanding Variety Sketch Series. So he decided to make his first movie, which I'm sure he had been thinking about for a while, given all of his work on TV. Because, Key and Peele was him and Key.
Right.
Key Mike, what's his name? Key?
I don't know.
Forget his name. But anyway, every episode would make these little mini movies.
Yeah, and they were all conceptual, too.
Yeah, and so, it makes sense. Although, when I heard Jordan Peele was making a movie, I was like, what? But then I thought, well, of course, because every episode they were making these little mini movies that they could expand into something greater. And I remember seeing the previews. And I go to a lot of movies, and apparently I go to a lot of movies where they thought this movie would appeal to me. But this preview did not appeal to me at all.
I agree.
I thought, Every time it came out, I was like, oh boy, this looks really dumb.
Well, I will disagree. Well, let me put it this way. I wasn't turned off by it, but I wasn't excited at all by it. I was like, I saw it and I was like, okay, I might check it out on, like, once it comes out on DVD, you know, whatever. DVR.
I had completely written it off. I saw the preview probably 10 times in the last few months.
Yeah.
And every time it came on, I just thought, one, it looks like a horror movie and I'm not into horror. And two, it looks like a bad horror movie.
And it felt like you basically knew the movie from the preview.
Right. So, Birdo, did you like it? Did you like this movie?
Oh boy, I really enjoyed, in a very stressful way, this movie.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Oh, like from the near the beginning, I was just like so.
Oh, by the way, spoiler
alert, scene.
We're gonna spoil the entire movie.
Yes,
and this movie is completely ruined if it's spoiled.
Yeah.
The whole point of this movie is, you know, it's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah, there is definitely a big turn of events. That
And it's one of those movies where it's so much more enjoyable when you don't know it's...
That's right.
So...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
So basically, look, I had all those initial scenes where he shows up at the parents, actually starting with the cop pulling over, which they had in the preview, but it's still... I think what the movie gets so right is they really linger in the moments and they linger on the faces. And so you sort of feel, especially with the big screen, you sort of feel uncomfortable for them. So like with the cop's like, hey, can I have, please see your license. And the girl, this beautiful, supportive girlfriend is like, you don't need to see his license. Why do you need to see his license? And it's sort of like pause, awkward pause. And he's like, no, it's okay. It's like, no, you don't have to. Awkward pause. And you're just like, oh my God, it's so stressful. And that's like very near the beginning.
Right.
And so I really enjoyed that aspect of it. I like things like Curb Your Enthusiasm and other things that are uncomfortable, but you know, I sort of like working my way through them.
Yeah.
And this one had so much uncomfortable.
Right.
It's really great.
Yeah. I really liked it as well. I gave it a 7 out of 10. What would you give it?
Oh, for me, it's like an 8.5.
Wow. Yeah. Well, why do you think there's a difference between you and me in that way? Why do you like it so much? Because, I mean, a 7 out of 10, like I've said in other episodes.
Yeah, it's great, but it's...
That 7 out of 10, when I give something 7 out of 10, that means absolutely watchable. In fact, you should see it. But I reserve 8, 9, 10 for those very rare movies that I think transcend the typical... solid good movie.
Yeah,
you know?
I think for me one of the aspects is that you really could have made the movie that was in the previews.
Yeah,
and it was so much more, and I agree with you that the twist is a lot of it, but I so enjoyed all the scenes leading up to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it had sort of the appeal that I get out of movies like American Psycho or other movies where every scene is really important.
Yeah.
You don't have wasted scenes.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I also thought the actors and characters were really great.
Yeah.
Because it was like, there was, like, everyone was a little bizarre and a little, like, microcosm of stuff. So I don't know. I really want to see it again. Maybe I'm too excited right now about it. We'll see after seeing it again if it changes. But yeah.
Yeah. For a movie of this genre, I loved it. I typically don't like horror movies, but honestly, I don't think of it as it's being billed as a horror movie, but I don't think of it as a horror movie at all.
Right.
I think it's more of what you might call a psychological thriller or a suspense movie or something.
Was the brother one of the Culkins?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Because he looked so weird and so menacing.
Yeah. I actually didn't like his character because he had a accent that was totally different from... He almost had like a New York accent. It really sounded funny to me. But anyway,
I got this sense from him, like, you know, once you know the whole story, you realize, oh my God, these kids,
right.
were raised in a cult, in a weird, bizarre. Right. And so you sort of like get this idea that she's a great actress.
Yeah.
He's not.
Right. It's almost, in some ways, you could, I think his name was Jeremy, the brother. You could almost look at the brother as, in the end, it all makes sense as to why he's in such a bad mood all the time.
Yeah.
Because he even though he seems the most psychopathic, he's probably the least psychopathic by the end, because you realize that he's just a pawn in these three psychopaths' world.
Right.
And the other three psychopaths are so psychopathic that they're, like you said, really good at masking the truth, whereas he's not so good at it.
And I get the sense that, I don't know if you share in this, but I got a sense that he was so resentful that they actually preferred the black guys over him.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm saying something that if you haven't seen it by this point and you're listening, will make no sense, but then stop listening.
Yeah, stop listening. Go watch it.
Yeah.
Come back to the episode.
Yeah.
Save it on your phone.
Because remember how intent he was on, like, you know, I do jujitsu and it's better. It's, you know, you got to be smart for right. it. And
yeah, there's so many scenes that make more sense when you find out at the end. It's almost as if he was like, what am I, chop liver? You can't cut my head open and like put right. another brain in my...
Right, right.
I want to say this before I forget, but I just want to say that I think it's a little overblown in terms of the critical acclaim. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's someone who is saying that I really liked it.
Yeah, 100% is an exaggeration.
Yeah, I mean, it is now... I looked on Rotten Tomatoes. It is now out of... What? How many movies do you think have been made since movies became made? You know, like a million or something, right?
Yeah.
It is now number 33 of the best movie of all time on Rotten Tomatoes. Okay, yeah. Number 33. It's above Alien, Annie Hall, Gone with the Wind, The yeah. Godfather, Toy Story, Jaws, okay. Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
It's overblown, man.
Yeah, of course.
Like, it's a good movie. Solid movie.
But this happens a lot with Rotten Tomatoes, where you have either under or over by a lot
yeah.
in some cases.
Yeah.
Like maybe the 80 percentile of movies get sort of slotted right. But then there's these aberrations where they're either panned critically
yeah.
to such an extreme or, yep, it's 100% across the board.
Right. I feel like, again, I have no data for this, but my sense is that... One, I think it's of our time,
yeah.
right? And so I think as a critic, you can't go wrong by saying it's wonderful.
Right.
Two, I'm just going to take a guess and say that most critics are white.
Yeah.
And the amount of, like that one guy who gave it a bad review, he's probably going to be harassed online because of that bad review of this movie.
And I think he's a black guy, actually.
Oh, interesting. Well,
but he's also, he had sort of anti-fame because he also had brought down the score for another really great movie. I'm forgetting which one it was. And he was like the only one who gave it a negative review.
Really? That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I again, just total speculation and... I recognize, because you know, have a good eye for movies and you're giving it an 8.5, which is pretty high for you. But I'm taking a guess and saying that there's white guilt happening here.
Yeah.
And worry of backlash.
If you don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really go wrong by saying it's a great movie, right? You can't right. go wrong. But you could go wrong if you decided to criticize it. I mean... I'm not saying, because the whole thing here is when you actually look at Rotten Tomatoes, you know, look up a decidedly awesome movie,
yeah.
you know, like Shawshank Redemption or something. Yeah. You will find, on average, some people at the end of the bell curve who will absolutely hate it.
Yep.
And, or at least will give it like a 3 yeah. out of 10
we'll
or something.
Poke the holes that it actually does have.
It just didn't appeal to yeah. them or yeah. for whatever reason. And the fact that this movie has only one person
yeah.
who's
less than perfect,
right, is saying something, I think, about our culture and not necessarily about this movie.
I could definitely see it accounting for some of that. I also wonder though if, like in my case where the experience was so exhilarating. I think maybe if you've only watched it once and you rated it really closely to having watched it, I think that might, if you felt like me, we're like, oh, it's like a roller coaster ride. I think this happened, and I'm not comparing this movie to Gravity, but do you remember how Gravity was sort of like universally loved for a while?
Yeah. And then you kind of think about it, and you're like, well, yeah, wait a second.
Because when I saw Gravity, it was definitely a thrill ride, but it was a kind of a one and done kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think this movie is like that, but I do think that there is that first watching that's almost like you cannot repeat.
But
because that surprise, the whole first encounter, yeah, like it's really great. And I think if people like saw it that first time, got that visceral experience, wrote their review, that might have also bumped up their.
Well, maybe, but I again, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
But when you think about all of the critics universally, except yeah, for one, it just doesn't make a lot of sense because it's a great movie. It's well crafted.
Yeah.
It's simple yet complicated. But I think it does suffer from some problems, and not major problems, but you know, if you're a critic and you're used to critiquing things, then yeah, I'm sure that you could
write about that stuff.
Yeah. And so, and it's not like a movie like, I don't know, where it's obviously a instant classic. You know, what's a movie like Moonlight? To some extent, to me, it feels like an instant classic. Anyway, I'll get off this.
Get off your anti-high horse.
Yeah. The acting was great. I was completely convinced by everybody.
Yeah, that guy, that main dude, what's his name?
I forget his name. He's English.
He's great. I've seen him in other
He was
stuff.
In Black Mirror.
That's what I thought.
And he was in Sicario, which you have
which
not
I still
seen
haven't
yet.
Seen.
Yeah. It's a totally effective thriller. The entire movie, especially as it progressed, I was on the edge of my seat.
Yeah.
No idea what was happening. It was paced very well, edited very well.
And I got to say, that girl, the girlfriend,
yeah,
she was amazing. First yeah. of all, I was in love with her at the beginning. I'm like, oh my God, she's such a great girlfriend
yeah.
and stuff. And I will say that I started seeing it coming because I was like, they did drop all the signs. Like, come on. How does she not know that there's this yearly thing happening at her
well they
house.
Really sold that right because she's like I don't get it she's,
yeah but when
like,
you started
it's the same day every year
right and then
like,
but
huh?
then when she was telling him like oh no you'll love my parents they'll love you they're totally and you get there and immediately she's embarrassed by her dad and she's all these things so on the one hand they did it really great because you can see that sort of like oh wait I was in my bubble thinking my family was great but it right. turns out this is embarrassing right. and they did do a good job with her sort of like I'm so sorry I didn't even realize they're just as bad as the cop oh my gosh
right.
But then towards like a little later, you do start wondering, how is she not finding all of this bizarre?
Well, I thought they played that pretty well. I mean, when the twist occurred at the end, I was, when she essentially reveals herself yeah. to be an evil person, I told everyone there's a spoiler alert that yeah. just ruined it for everybody. Yeah. If you haven't seen it,
yeah.
When she revealed herself as an evil person, I was completely surprised.
Well, no, you were surprised when you saw the photos, right? Or did you think she was hypnotized?
I didn't know. I thought I saw the photos and I was like, well, maybe she's in on it, but maybe she's not. Maybe she's hypnotized or maybe she, yeah, I thought maybe she had lost her memory. That's what I was thinking. I didn't know. I was like, maybe she's in on it. Or, but the way she was acting and the way they were, you know, writing yeah. the part,
yeah,
it, I was like,
no, they still left you an out. You're right because they showed him finding the photos,
yeah.
which, by the way, is such a great moment. Because on the one layer, there's the, oh my God, she lied to me about other guys, right? Which is there's that male aspect of like, oh my God, she told me she'd only been, I'm her first black guy, and there's this like 20 photos of her being with all these guys.
Right.
So he's immediately like, what? But that's so irrelevant in that moment compared to the realization of.
You're going to die.
And then, you're right, she plays, because you would think if she was aware of her, of him going into that little cubby,
yeah.
that she'd be like, what were you doing? But instead, she's like, totally fine. And
right.
So then you're right, it kind of seems like she doesn't really know what's happening.
And the way she's looking for her keys, it seemed like she had been hypnotized where
I can't find them.
She seemed like she was confused.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like her brain was right. short, you know, circuiting yeah. or something.
By the way, it's not, it's entirely possible that she is hypnotized and the right. kid is hypnotized, the brother is hypnotized.
Right.
Because you gotta imagine that. At the very least, they're severely traumatized in the way they were raised.
Yeah, you know, but the way that they portrayed the hypnotism element, yeah. which I'll get into the science in a bit, they didn't make it out to be something of a mind control thing.
Sure.
They made yeah. it into a thing where she could make you fall asleep and yeah. blah, blah, blah. I think that this movie is, tell me what you think. I think it's an instant classic, almost like a cult classic. It has cult classic written all over mm-hmm. it, you know? And also, I think it's a great crossover movie because it's horror, but without, like, it appeals to me. Like, I saw someone drag me to see The Conjuring 2, which came out last year, which got really great reviews, by the way.
Oh, it did?
And I was just, it had all the tropes, you know?
See.
The, you know, something you see in the background walk, yeah, you know, yeah. da 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 da. And this movie had that too,
yeah,
actually.
True.
But never in this movie was I like, oh God, you know,
right.
here we go with the horror, you know, the music and the tension and the something jumps out at you and you jump out of your seat.
Right.
And like it didn't really have any of that. But it had the element, the basic suspense of horror.
That's right.
Almost like, what's his face? The English director from The Birds. And
oh, Hitchcock?
Hitchcock, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they replaced a lot of the jumpiness with, not that they didn't have jumpiness, but there was grotesque.
Yeah.
There were all these grotesque moments where you're like, that doesn't look right. That person does not look right.
Like when all the,
they're not
when they go
right.
upstairs and all the old people stop and
yes.
like look up.
That was so great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. By the way, that was another thing that made me think that there was something wrong with the girlfriend too, because she would have noticed that.
Right.
But of course, they didn't show where she was, and there were a lot of outs, but I did start wondering, like, that just doesn't seem normal. How could you have spent all your life here and not see all these weirdness, you know?
Right. And given that this was made by Jordan Peele, it easily could have fallen into a comedy. And it did have comedic moments in
it did,
a sense.
Yes.
But if I were the producer listening to Jordan Peele pitch this to me, I would be really worried that it would be a terrible movie, you know, because of he's just a funny guy.
Right.
And him writing a horror movie, especially that, because you could, if you made this wrong and directed it wrong.
Yep.
It could have absolutely just been a joke. Like,
well, this literally could just be a skit on his show, right?
Right.
It's like, boyfriend goes to meet the parents,
yeah.
and then, whoa, they're cutting my brain open.
And then, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
Like, it could have, it even rode that line, because
right.
the friend
right, right.
was
the friend
just
was a comedy
constantly
yeah.
joking, you know? And I mean, everything he said was ridiculously comedic.
What
know?
Was great about The Friend, by the way, is it had that, remember when the first Scary Movie came out? And the first Scream.
Yeah.
And it was like self-aware about horror movies. Mm-hmm. And I really thought that was great, because they're like, oh, every horror movie, this is going to happen and someone's going to go by themselves. And I thought that was a great element.
Right.
That the friend was doing that in this one. He's like, they're kidnapping black guys and they're making them sex slaves.
Yeah. Right. Which I thought was a brilliant, kind of risky move, because you're essentially calling out the plot and,
yes.
and ruining the movie.
Yes.
But when he was saying those things, for me watching it, I was like, I don't think so. I was more, I felt like I was completely in the main character, Chris's
yeah.
shoes.
Right.
And when the friend was saying basically the truth, I'm like, I don't,
yeah.
it doesn't seem like that's what's happening.
And he had the brilliant insight too, because, you know, I don't know about you, but I definitely assumed that in spite of what they were saying and in spite of all initial appearances, that they were absolutely traditional white supremacists, probably. That's what I was imagining.
Oh, interesting.
And so, like, when he first meets the dad and he hugs him, he's like, come here and stuff. In my mind, I was thinking, like, oh, but he's really grossed out by this internally and he really hates them and stuff. But then they're showing him the pictures and he's like, that's my dad. You know, he got beat by what's his name. And I also thought, oh no, there's a lot of resentment there. And all of that was sort of true, but from the other angle, which was they were racist in this different way. There was like you are great physical specimens that we can use to put our brains into. It was like, that was a brilliant twist, you know?
Yeah. I think I've begun to realize that when I watch movies, I don't try to predict the ending because I think that might ruin it for me. Plus, I'm so into the movie that the writer, director, Jordan Peele, he's, you know, Chris is the person we identify with.
Yeah.
You know, he's the everyman, so to speak. And so I was completely with Chris's perspective. And I think when I watch other movies, I'm similar. Because when I talk with you, sometimes you'll do that. Sometimes you'll be like, oh, I thought it was going this way. And then when I think back, I don't even think I was asking those questions.
Right.
You know, like when the clues are coming out of like, you know, like that one black guy who was the guy from the very beginning,
right,
Andre, right. His character, when he shows up and he has that nosebleed and stuff, I remember just being like a tiny little question of like, is this what's going to happen to Chris? But I didn't really kind of think it through.
Was that guy the guy from the beginning?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Got it.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know that.
Well, I figured it might have been, but I wasn't sure because in my mind he looked different.
Yeah, he looked a little different because it was night in the beginning, but yeah, that was him.
Yeah, and it sort of doesn't affect the plot if it is or isn't, but it's cool that it is.
Well, it does because you have to know that he was forcefully abducted
I guess what I mean is that you could extrapolate to know that, oh, they probably have done this to a lot of other folks, but yeah.
So what'd you think of the ending?
Okay, starting from like where he realizes what's up and he starts trying to evade the operation, basically.
Right.
Well, first of all,
and then he escapes, and then the friend Andre shows up in the car.
Yeah, that whole part. Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, so even before that, there was one really amazing moment, which I realize is sort of you know, you're probably going to talk about this, but it's when he's getting hypnotized the first time, and her voice drops low and she's like, fall, you know, and then they show the camera and stuff like that. I thought it was a really cool moment in the movie, even if it's not very realistic. It was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Cause you as a viewer almost feel it, you know, you're like, whoa.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a sec. What do you think of the ending?
But anyways, as far as the ending, so it had some of the usual horror movie pieces, which is the one person is trying to avoid or escape from the thing. But there was this empowered, usually the way this plays out in horror movies, it's usually some female who at the end is kicking ass and taking names with the machete or something. So this time he's basically the female and he's just beating everyone down, which I thought was great. I love that his final nemesis would be the girlfriend. That's poetic. You know, that's cool. And she transforms so radically. She's got her hair pulled back. She doesn't look pretty anymore. She looks severe and she's just like out for blood and is ruthless.
Sarah Connor and Terminator 2.
I love the parallels with the deer at the beginning. There was a lot of that. Also the parallels to his story about his mom dying and him. And so that was great. I definitely freaked out when the cop car showed up.
Yeah.
I was like, no, you can't end it. Like, oh, he's going to get shot on sight. Like, oh,
yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. I totally thought that would be the case. And that was the original ending, by the way. So the original ending was Chris, you know, the cop, everything is the same. You know, that cop, you know, car shows up and white local cops get out and convict Chris of, you know, not the cops, but later on he's convicted of murdering Rose and the family.
Oh, how disappointing.
Yeah. But interesting, would have been an interesting ending, right? I think it would have been a lesser ending because it would have been almost expected in a sense.
Yeah.
But Jordan Peele said that in the time that he wrote, because he wrote the story 10 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And since then, there's been a lot of high-profile police brutality arrests,
right,
and, you know, injustices. And he has, when he originally wrote the story, he wanted to illuminate the world to those kind of, but then those became really well-known.
Yeah.
You could almost say, like,
cliche.
Almost cliche, yeah. Right. And so I think Jordan Peele's like, that's the expected thing, so yeah. I'm going to go against the grain.
I'm so glad he did, because not only would it have felt really bad. Okay, because, you know, on the one hand, if this was sort of a more traditional horror movie, I don't know if you remember in House of a Thousand Corpses, there is this sort of like very disappointing for the protagonist ending. But that's okay, because the real protagonists of that movie are the bad guys. So it's almost like you're in this weird, dark way rooting for that dark family to sort of succeed in their nefarious things. But in this movie, that would have been really disastrous. So I was so glad that it was him. And then that added a little bit of that funniness too, because it's like he's TSA and he's got like this TSA car and he steps out. I thought that was great. I was expecting them to run her over with the car. So I guess I was disappointed by that.
Yeah. So I liked the ending. I thought that it got wrapped up real quickly, which is great. A lot of movies today, especially, take way too long to wrap up. And I felt like this one wrapped up real fast.
Yeah. And they threw reveals at us pretty fast. They're like, Grandma. Yeah.
Right.
Grandpa.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, as soon as he, you know, puts the thing in it, puts the cotton in his ears.
Yeah.
And then the Jeremy, you know, and he grabs one of those, what do you call it? Croquet balls, which is so white. You know what I mean?
Right.
And just beats him over the head and then proceeds to slowly kill everyone in the family.
Right.
But in a quick succession, you know, because I think that would have been tempting as a writer to sort of string out a little bit or to make the fight scenes longer.
Stressful, you know, more stressful moments where he's hiding and waiting.
Giving each of the baddies more screen time.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the dad, he just... You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm also really glad that it wasn't all a dream, because I thought, well, since hypnotism is involved in this, maybe he's going to, at the end, he's going to wake up and be on that chair. Uh-huh. Sort of like Inception, where they leave this question mark as to whether or not the whole thing was a dream or maybe it wasn't. And I was really worried about that.
Right, right. You know, I also really liked, I don't know how on purpose this was. So it felt to me like Catherine Keener. Mm-hmm. Was not very voluntarily doing all of this. And not that she was hypnotized, but more that she was sort of like going along with it because this is what she's been doing now for years, but sort of like really like half there. Mm. And I even in that photo, and like in that video where you see you remember they show him the video when he's all tied up of the grandpa talking stuff. Even in there, she's already seeming like she doesn't really want to be there. So I got this sense of she was going along for the ride, but not really happy about it.
I didn't really pick that up. I thought there would be a bigger twist at the end, like the daughter was in control of everybody or the mother wasn't in control of everybody. I kept thinking that the twist, if there was one thing I was sort of thinking about in terms of the end, I was thinking, is this all going to be a dream because it's hypnotism? Mm-hmm. And who is really in charge?
Right.
Which I thought was brilliant, because he could have done that. He could have been like, you know, like the dad has his head hit and then he's like, wait a second, I've been hypnotized, you know, this whole time. Or even the girlfriend, Rose, it could have been revealed that she was good, because that's the whole thing. Like, you kind of want her to be good, right? Because we sided with her at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
And nope. They're all in it. They're all evil.
One, and you could say the real ringleader is the big, tall black guy, because that's Grandpa.
Right.
He's the mastermind.
Right. He's not black on the inside.
Right.
That way. All right, let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll talk about racism, hypnotism, psychotherapy, plot holes, all that kind of stuff. What do you say, Bertel?
Yeah.
All right, we're back. If you haven't already, become a patron of the podcast by going to patreon.com. When you become a patron of the podcast, you get access to all of our premium episodes in which we do deep dives on various different topics. Also, tell a friend or a colleague about the show. That's how other people learn about us. Also, rate us on iTunes if you can. It's always helpful to do that.
100%.
Yeah. And if you do so, let me know, and I'll send you some swag. Berto, let's do a... By the way, so we're also on Instagram just recently. Every now and then, I post some stupid photo on Instagram. So if you want to see that, go there. But Berto, give me a first letter, and we'll give somebody some swag.
Oh.
There are four O's, Berto. Which one? Give me a number between one and four.
Three.
Three. Olivia. I think you already chose the O's.
Olivia?
We didn't
choose Olivia. They get a chance.
All right. Olivia. If we've already chosen you before, you get more swag. I'm only going to do one because I want to move forward here. So, Berto, racism. What do you think about the element of racism in this movie?
So on the one hand, it was definitely initially playing to sort of that ultimate fear that black folks must have, and that I could imagine having as a Hispanic in some context, but of going to that pocket of hostile white people that are going to imprison you and hang you, you know, like that's kind of like the ultimate. And I think that's what the previews sort of made it look like.
Yeah.
They had all these, it seemed like they had all these slave labor black people.
Yeah, had that one scene where the woman the servant is like, no, everything's fine here.
Everything's fine.
And so it seemed like she was enslaved.
Right.
When in fact, she's actually the grandma.
Right.
You know, so.
And, so there's that. I really liked that he went even more, he took this more subtle detour into no, they're a different kind of racism. They're certainly racist, but they're looking at it from this sort of my interpretation was this. It all starts with this guy gets beat by, what's the guy? The famous racer that in the Olympics?
Owens,
right? He gets beat. And so the predictable route is I hate black people so much, right? Instead, he's like, you know what? They are superior physically, but that will make a great host for our superior brains, or at least for our entitled brains. And so then he sketches out this whole thing. His son becomes a neural guy. And then he's like devises this super, creepy plot to, we will get the best physical specimens we can and we will put ourselves in there. And then they sort of convince themselves that that's actually not racist at all because they love, look, we're going to live in those bodies.
Right.
What?
Right. It's a metaphor for cultural appropriation.
Right.
It's a metaphor for objectifying
total objectification.
Someone from another race.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting, it feels, you know, as I was watching it, and especially at the end when I finally figured out, oh, they're all taking over black people's bodies. That's interesting. And it just felt so subtle and nuanced in terms of what it was a metaphor for.
Right.
Because, you know, they're walking up to him and they're like, black people are trending now.
Yeah.
And I know Tiger. Yeah. And wow, you know, I like the guy... from Office Space, the blind guy who ended up wanting Chris's body.
I didn't catch that's the stapler.
Yeah.
Oh.
He wanted to see the world through his eyes. Meaning that, because he's an artist.
Right.
Chris is an artist, a photographer, who takes pictures, incidentally, of what looked to be the ghetto.
Yeah.
And this... which is trending now, right? Because it's raw and, you know, dark and gritty and real.
Right.
And this art critic or art owner, art person wants to be in the body of Chris, which is why Rose, the daughter, sought Chris out in the first place.
Yeah.
Because this one guy was like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to want to, you know, be in this.
Which, by the way, that's almost a plot hole.
How
in
so?
That, but it is and it isn't. On the one hand, if you take his explanation about it, he's like, hey, different people have different reasons. Mine is not your, I don't care what color of skin you are. It's because of your eyes, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But it happens to be conveniently another black person.
Right.
So that's a little bit of a plot hole in that, or it's at least convenient for the plot in that she's only kidnapped black people.
Yeah.
And he also is black, even though the reasons for the guy that wants him, he says doesn't matter that he's black.
Interesting, yeah.
But I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just one of those, like, you could have almost, I would have almost preferred it in the end if there were different race slaves.
Yeah.
And that really, it was a preference thing.
Yeah.
That almost would have been an extra twist. It's like, oh, this isn't about black people at all. They will take anyone with the right qualifications or something like that.
Right.
But I think
would have really diverged from
yeah,
the overall yeah. message.
So I don't really mean that I would have preferred it. What I mean is that if he was right and honest, then you would have imagined seeing more diversity. That's the thing.
Yeah, I thought it was super interesting how they made the daughter part of the conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jordan Peele wasn't afraid to make all the white people bad in this movie,
right?
Which was a pretty bold choice. And if made in another time or made by someone who didn't have as much juice as Peele does, juice and Peele, I'm imagining that the white producers would have said, let's make one white person redeemable
yeah.
so that we don't completely alienate all the white people, which is the majority right. of the movie-going audience.
It's like the cop, by the way, was the normal person, even though he still asked for the ID, but he backed off of it.
He was still a dick, but much less of a dick yeah. than the other white
and,
people.
And I got the sense like he was a dick because he doesn't know a different way to be. Like, of course he's going to ask for the ID of this. I'm not going to say black person, but it's just someone that I find sort of maybe suspicious, but he's that way because that's how he grew up. That's his environment.
Yeah.
As opposed to like these other monsters that are like, yeah, let's collude to kidnap and kill and yeah. take over these bodies.
Yeah. The monstrosity of the other white people was pretty severe. But I'm guessing that somebody either hoped or even said to Peele, look, maybe make the daughter good.
Right.
Because white people need somebody. And right. that's my experience. As an Asian American, it bugs the crap out of me that every movie Hollywood makes, for the most part, has to have a sympathetic white person at the center. And other movies, you know, how many movies have a sympathetic Asian person at the center?
Right.
Hardly any. You know, Harold and Kumar is probably like one of the only movies that is like popular, that like is, you know, totally centered on, I think Harold is a Korean in the movie. I think in real
is
life.
He Korean?
He's Korean. And then a Indian
right.
guy, right? Anyway.
By the way, they had an Asian guy bidding as well.
They did?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Remember, he's the one who asks the protagonist. He's like, tell me what you think. Do you think black people are at a disadvantage or an advantage in our current society?
Oh, right, right, right.
And then the dad's like, that's an interesting question. What do you think?
Yeah. There were echoes of Trayvon Martin at the beginning as he's walking down the street.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's also interesting that this movie was produced and thought up way before Trump was president.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, another reason why it's getting such great reviews right now,
because oh, it
plays yeah. into things. It's always weird to think, it's like, oh man, this is a brilliant
so
movie. Yeah, but no one would have predicted
right.
that this is where we'd be right now, you know?
Yeah.
It plays on the white female taking away our black men theme.
Right, yeah.
And interesting that Jordan Peele, his mom is white and his wife is white.
I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know what Jordan Peele's thoughts would be about that, but it, you know, it's a common trope that for for black women will say, like, white women just come in and sweep up all of our good black men, and we're stuck with, you know, something else.
In the Asian community, there are similar things.
Right.
Where people feel like one race or another interferes.
But it's reversed in gender. In Asian culture, the, you know, the stereotype or the general things that I hear are Asian women are fetishized by white men, whereas Asian men are just forgotten.
Right.
And feminized by society, and therefore Asian women have much more juice than Asian. And so Asian men are the ones going, like, people are coming in sweeping up all our Asian women.
I see. Jeremy,
the brother, plays lacrosse, which is total white.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. At the end, she's looking at NBA players, which is also, you know, stereotypical of that.
Yep.
I liked the scenes where Chris is at that party and he's made to feel uncomfortable by all the comments of white people trying to make him feel better. Those scenes were extremely, well, not feel better, but just like trying to connect with him.
Yeah.
They were so cringeworthy.
Yes.
But you could absolutely imagine people saying, and I've seen people say stuff like this. I've probably even said stuff like this myself. You know, like that one person is like, I play golf. I know Tiger.
I know Tiger.
As if for Chris, he's going to be sitting there going, great. And as an Asian American myself, I've been in, and as a Hispanic person yourself. You know, we've been there before, right?
Totally.
It's an innocent thing because it doesn't come from a place of hostility. They're trying to connect. It'd be like if I was in the NFL and someone said, oh, I played football in high school.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I'm in the NFL and I'm at this super high level and someone's like, yeah, I played peewee football when I was in the sixth grade, I don't care.
I throw catch every Sunday.
Yeah. But to that person, they're trying to connect. You know, they're trying to say, we have something in common, or maybe we can talk about this. Or I love football so much that I played it. And so, you know, I love what you do.
Right. For me, in high school, when I moved up here, it was always, is your uncle Pablo? You know, because I'd be like, I'm from Colombia. They're like, is your uncle Pablo? And everyone thought they were the first one, of course, to say the joke. And I was like, and I would just go with it. I was like, absolutely. You know, but that was like that. And that's the extreme case because they're literally the only thing they know about Colombia is coffee and cocaine. So,
yeah. Right. And so it becomes, by the 10,000th time, really tiresome.
Yeah.
And again, it's innocent. And I feel like a lot of times the internet and people will pathologize that and just, as if the people are doing it on purpose. And they're not, you know, they're ignorant and you could say they're guilty of not educating themselves on how that could be bothersome.
Sure.
Or they're guilty of not exposing themselves to more people of different cultures so that they would learn that those things.
Right. But it happens both directions because, you know, we had a gringo in my class in Colombia and we had one Asian person. I think I've talked about this before. The Asian guy got teased mercilessly and the gringo was teased because of his accent mercilessly.
Right.
And so every sort of like cohesive unit tends to be very, you know, wary or disrespectful towards like the minority. And in these cases, these aren't necessarily disrespects. Like you're saying, they're almost well-intentioned ways to connect, but we just really don't have, innately, we don't know how to connect well with others that are different from us in some way.
Yeah.
And I will say I appreciated the Pablo jokes better than whether or not I liked tacos.
Well, do you? Okay, let's talk about hypnotism. Well, just as a final note on the racism bit, it's hard to put into words how interesting this movie comments on racism in America right now.
Right.
We, you know, gave it a shot by describing some of the elements that we could describe in words, but it's hard. If you've seen the movie, which my God, I hope you have, because we've completely ruined it for you.
Yeah.
You know what we mean, hopefully, in that it, because Chris, the way that he, his character is written and acted and directed, like I said, he's an everyman.
Right.
Like I can identify with him even though I'm not black.
Totally.
And you can just feel his, and he's trying to be cool. You know, he's just like, he's never a dick. Like people are like, I know Tiger. He never rolls his eyes. He's just kind of, you can just see it in his face. Like
he smiles. He's like, oh,
okay. Yeah. All right.
Like when the dad at the beginning is like, so how long has this been going on? This thing. And he's just
this
like,
thing.
And he yeah. And he's just like, yeah. Yeah.
And so that element is interesting. And then the first scene when Andre is walking down the street, you also kind of identify with him too.
Right.
Because and he's talking to someone on the phone. He's like, where is this party? Where am I going? Like, yeah. I think I'm lost. And then this car pulls up kind of menacingly and he's like, oh boy.
He's like, I'm not even going to deal with this. I'm just walk away.
Right. And the way that it, you could relate to him while it was still believable, and it just humanized black people in a way that a lot of movies just don't do,
yep.
You know? And Chris's character, you know, the weird thing is I bet you most white people identify with Chris than they do with the white people.
Right. Right.
At least I hope so anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's hard to put into words how this movie is, and maybe that's why it gets such great reviews, is because I can't think of another movie other than like Straight Outta Compton, maybe a recent movie that really captures the vibe of today's racist state.
Yeah.
Straight Outta Compton I remember as I'm watching it, I'm like, man, this is totally relevant today.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah, it was sort of sad in a way, because when I was watching that one, I was like, oh, I wish I could sit here and say, yeah, that was like what it was like.
Yeah.
But A, I didn't know it at the time, and B, now I know that it's like that now. It's right. Like, wow.
Yeah. So, hypnotism. What'd you think of the hypnotism? You talked about the scene and the way that they, you know, shot it, but what'd you think of that?
Okay, so totally, I was fully okay with going along with it being presented the way it was, meaning I was okay that it was not necessarily realistic or whatever, but I really liked a couple aspects. One of them is, as he starts talking to her, and he's like, what, do you use like a little, you know, what was it? The
watch
or whatever. And she's already doing the little tea thing already at that point. And so as the viewer, you're like, oh no, he's already ensnared. And the way she talked and the way she starts asking him questions, I thought, oh, this is an interesting, it was sort of like a different way to present hypnotism than I'd seen at least any time recently. Because it was sort of like, oh, she's using sort of emotional manipulation coupled with like a distraction, a sensory distraction. And then, so I was almost like, okay, I could see how in the movie this could work. And like I said, I really liked when all of a sudden she's like, fall down. And then he's like, no, and then her voice goes down. And then he's like, whoa. I love that. I love the visual of it. I love that they present this sort of like TV screen that he sees. And he's like in this dark world struggling. Irrelevant of realism, I just thought that was a neat twist. Because the movie so far had been complete reality. And all of a sudden, like this abstract sort of fantasy thing happens.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa.
Yeah, it was reminiscent of Under the Skin, which you haven't seen yet, with Johansson, what's her name?
Scarlett
Johansson, ScarJo. It had that feel to it also, which I think Stranger Things also sort of stole from. But yeah, I agree. I loved that scene. The hypnotizing scene with the spoon was totally unnerving to me. I had to actually look away from the screen because I was like, this is starting to hypnotize me. I didn't like it. And actually, if you dissociate, this could trigger you, honestly, because it's pretty effective in that it's trance-inducing. Let's just put it that way. Now, having said that, that was mostly just my anxiety. I could have completely stared at the screen and nothing would have happened because hypnotism doesn't work this way. The hypnotism bit was completely stupid.
Yeah.
And as a person who understands hypnotism, I'm just like, oh God, here we go again. I mean, because the whole movie is based on reality. You know, there's no, basically the way this movie is written, this woman, she's an X-Man. She's a superhero with this, or she's God or something. She has some completely supernatural power, like Superman flying, to be able to just talk to someone and put them into that state forcibly.
Yeah. But to be fair, at that point, although you don't know it at that point, that is the beginning of the realization that this is a fictional universe, because then he's able to transplant the brain, for example.
Yeah. But again, the transplanting the brain, you could imagine that technology being based in reality.
But keeping the other brain around, too. So it was almost like a melding of the two brains.
Right.
You had to, at that point, be like, okay, it's supernatural. It's fictional. It's not even sci-fi. It's magical realism, sort of.
Right. And so, just so everyone understands, hypnotism does not work this way. Real hypnotism is almost always bastardized in the movies. It's because it's one of the best story devices.
Yeah.
For an evil person to erase your memory or control your mind or make you fall asleep or make you do things.
Right.
Also, the stage performing hypnotism situations is another situation that's perfect for our culture, and that it's super entertaining. It's funny to see someone have an orgasm on stage. It's also wonderful if you are a ham to act like you're having an orgasm on stage and having everyone laugh. It's a huge, you get something out of it. All of this it's a myth. None of this exists.
Right.
And it as a person who understands hypnotism, it drives me crazy. You know, it'd be like, every time they depict depression, a third arm grows out of the back of someone's back. You know, it's that ridiculous to
me. When it's supposed to be out of the front.
Right. It's like, okay, yeah, there's this thing called depression, but you don't grow another arm. There's this thing called hypnotism, but it doesn't look like that. And it doesn't work. Like, stop portraying it that way. You know, it's not a thing. And so, you know, I want everyone to understand that hypnotism is a thing and hypnotherapy is a thing, and it's a voluntary process.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work on everybody.
Yeah.
It can involve twirling a spoon, but it can involve a watch. It can involve just a clicking noise or something, but you have to do it willingly. No one can forcibly hypnotize. If it was even remotely possible that like a small set, like five different people, could forcibly hypnotize even like half the population, they would be instant dictators.
Yeah.
All they'd have to do is hypnotize, you know, a small set of people to be their minions.
Totally.
You know, like you could hypnotize, just say, you know, you get someone off the street, you hypnotize, and you say, I want you to be you, but when I snap my fingers, you're going to go into a state and you're going to do everything I tell you word for word. You know, like you're going to work your ass off really hard, and you're going to give me every single penny, and you're going to live in my basement, and you're going to eat bread and water.
Multiply that by 10. Now you have a 10x income.
Now you have like $1 million a year.
Yeah.
And then that'll give you, you know what I mean? Like,
now you have access to the powerful people that you can then hypnotize.
Right. So if hypnotism worked like this, the world would be completely fucked.
By the way, we should write that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, The Logical Hypnotist.
The Logical Hypnotist.
Now, hypnotism can, for some people, the success rate is not great, but it can, and it has been shown to help people reduce pain, reduce anxiety, even quit smoking like they suggest in the movie. It can help you fall asleep. But have you ever been hypnotized before?
No.
It's essentially just, imagine if I were to talk with you. You've done relaxation exercises before, yes. Right? Like, imagine the energy from your legs are flowing out through the bottom of your feet.
Whoa.
It's almost exactly like that.
I'm now trapped in a black area with a TV. I see you on a TV screen right now.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was saying, like, I fully realized from the beginning of that was like, okay, this is totally fictional, but let's go with it. And then it was very...
Yeah, and as I was watching the movie, I'm like, I liked the movie so much that I didn't complain about it when it right. was happening, but I made a small mental note in my mind, like, okay, here we go again. Now, the psychotherapy, because she's a psychiatrist, right?
Yeah.
Which I thought they were going to work in some sort of medical thing, but they didn't
a pill to take.
Yeah, but they didn't need that because...
No, she had magical powers.
Yeah, well... She never had any medical... She didn't do anything medical.
That's right.
So I was like, kind of interesting that they made her a psychiatrist instead of just a psychologist or just a regular therapist.
You're right. Because actually, okay, nitpicking, if they wanted to make it, which I don't think was the point of the movie, but if they wanted to make it more believable, you could have gone a more pharmaceutical route.
Right.
And then you could actually imagine that she had developed some sort of thing to dissociate the person and do all this sort of...
Right.
Yeah.
But they didn't. Again, I will say that that scene of hypnotizing him was extremely effective. I liked the way it was written in that she slowly starts to emotionally manipulate him. But we have to go to a break. When we get back, we'll talk about the psychotherapy involved and also the plot holes and some other points. What do you say, Berto?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, we're back. If you haven't already joined the Facebook fan group, do so. It's not run by me. It's run by fans, and you get to participate on there and complain about us, which happens. That's why I'd never look at it. So it's called the Psychology in Seattle fan group. So go there. It's run by famous patron Lyndon. Other people who commonly contribute are patron Amy and patron Elizabeth and other people. Okay, so the psychotherapy involved, it's not heavy on psychotherapy, but it portrays a psychotherapist in the mother, and it plays into all of the stigma around therapy. Now, at the time I was watching it, it didn't bother me, but
right.
when I look back at it and of course it needed to be this way because the story needed this,
right?
But it just adds yet another psychotherapist who is a horrible human being.
Yeah, who starts therapying on you without your knowledge or consent.
Right, who's super pushy.
Right.
And the fact that at that stage in the movie, we were still thinking maybe we're in reality here, maybe they're not bad people.
Right.
And that seems believable that she would be super pushy with her technique.
Yeah.
Is just not the case. I mean, certainly there are some therapists out there that are like that.
Right.
But ethically speaking, the thing that I tell people is dentists don't walk around on the street pushing people over and like pulling out teeth.
Let me look at your mouth.
Therapists don't operate that way either. You know, people come to us and they beg us for help and then we provide that help.
Yes.
And when I'm off the clock, I'll be damned if I'm going to be working. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I definitely had that naive notion when I was younger. Whenever I would meet someone that was a psychologist, I would ask that question like, oh, are you analyzing me right now?
Right.
And it's sort of a common fear I think people have.
Right. And so this plays on all that stigma. You know, the therapist who has this delusion of grandeur in terms of their power, the therapist is totally in control. We have an involuntary client. We have the therapist digging for dirt. The therapist is going too fast. The therapist is playing mind games. And frankly, black people, they already hate therapists in general. I mean, not all, obviously. But, you know, it's for good reasons. The psychology and psychotherapy, the history of it has been highly exploitative and racist against black people in particular. So it's not a justified suspicion of us, but this movie isn't going to help that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So after the movie ended, I thought about it. I was like, ugh, you know, and this movie's probably helpful in society, but it probably doesn't help my profession very much.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so plot.
What about neurosurgeons?
Right, exactly.
They got a bad rap.
Yeah, and scientists tend to get a bad rap in movies.
That's true.
Also, you know. All right, plot holes. And I realize that plot holes, these aren't technically plot holes. They're just...
Gripes of rap.
Yeah, they're just like plot problems. But the black people go missing, yet their face stays the same.
Right.
And it seems like they would be easily recognized. I mean, if they plan on doing this for more and more people,
yeah,
they have a problem on their hands.
They do, especially because these aren't slaves actually kept in a dungeon.
Yeah.
These are the replacement of them.
Right.
So
they're walking around. They're going to the store. They're traveling.
Couple that came over with the black guy from the beginning.
Yeah.
He was dressed in these clothes, but he was still the same guy. And they are doing, like what you're saying, they're out and about. They're in the world.
Right. And he was still missing, so he hadn't decided, okay, I'm going to go back to my old world and say, by the way, I've fallen in love with this old woman, you know?
And you know, they one explanation could be like, that's right. That's how bad this is, that a black person could go missing and they'll never be found because they're in this totally different white ecosystem.
But if you really wanted to button up your process,
sure,
you would... I don't know, have a disguise or just not parade
or just
around.
Do what you just said, which is
go back. Yeah.
They'll feel terrible about it, but that's it. I'm cutting ties. I've changed. I've become a whatever.
Right. Because, you know, if you were transported into someone else's body, all you got to do is go back and just start alienating everybody.
And who's going to say, wait a minute.
Do you have another brain?
Yeah, exactly.
So there was that kind of, and that's not a big deal, but.
By the way, they have a built-in excuse. Cause you know how everyone, all of them have the scar?
Yeah.
You can say, like, look, listen, I don't know what, I got into an accident, definitely my head, I had some head trauma. Maybe that's why. I can't explain it.
Yeah.
But I need to change my life.
Yeah. The other thing, another problem with the story I thought is, why would they not just tie him up as soon as he arrived? I mean, what's the point in keeping him mobile, because he could have ran away at any point. He could have, like, in the middle of the night, he could have gotten a car.
Yeah, especially considering that the you know, other than the initial encounter with the parents, everything almost immediately after that starts being extremely fishy and weird.
Right.
So it's not like they had a really buttoned up, tight operation. The son is an extreme liability because as soon as he walks in, he's like, let's wrestle. And he's staring at him and it's like, geez, what the hell?
I mean, because the whole idea is they're trying to suck him in and keep him there, and then keep him there for that party so that
they can bid on him.
So that they can bid on him, so they can make money, and then, you know, so they can have a peaceful transfer of brains. But right away, everyone, like, she hypnotizes him. There's no need for that. The father is real goofy.
Oh, they did say the one thing about, you're right that the hypnotism on accident didn't have to happen. They could have tied him up and done it. But the one guy, the guy from the stapler, did say that it seems to work better if the other person's willing or, you know, understands the process or some of that. So you could sort of say, but it still doesn't make sense because he still was not willing. He was still tied up.
Yeah, he's not willing, yeah. And so they're like... I don't know. It just seems like, but again, the story had to be that way because it needed to build that tension.
Yeah.
But again, it just seems a little weird because this is not the first time they've done it. Rose had dated tens of dudes.
Yeah.
And so they've been through this process a lot.
They did say something. Clearly, they didn't have to bother with any of that when it was the son collecting them, because he said, like, yeah, the son's collection method, you wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
And so what was interesting is they sort of did solve your problem when it was the son bringing people home. Maybe that, and now I'm excusing their plot hole, maybe that's why the son was so pissed off too. He's like, why do we have to go through the charade? Like, I bring him already tied up and ready to go. Why do we have to go through this?
Right. And maybe that's why it... doesn't work as well with Andre when, you know, because
yeah.
it seemed to not be as a good of a...
Oh, interesting. Anyway. That could be. Because the grandpa definitely seemed well in there. And he was recruited by the daughter.
Right.
Huh. And so was the grandma.
Right. Right. That was shocking. So the other thing is why is she looking for the keys when she... When we know that she's, when she knows she's not going to find them, do you know?
I think, like, she was trying to make him feel.
But why? But why? Do you know what I mean? Like, she should have been like, you know, like pulled out a gun and just said, like, by the way, put these handcuffs on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But instead, she's like, I don't know where the keys are. And then they've got to walk all the way down. He could have bolted out the door and just ran and. They wouldn't, you know, that'd be at least a hassle to kind of try to get him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so, again, at the time, I'm not thinking this, but when I thought back, I'm like...
I sort of do get a sadistic vibe, though,
yeah.
from the family. Because if you think about it, the son is definitely a sadist, right? He's like, I'm going to go, I'm going to wrestle these guys, blah, blah. Yeah. The daughter, once you get to really know her, she doesn't, she said, you were one of my favorites, right? But when she's going through, like at the end, they show her looking through the basketball people and stuff like that. She seems completely cold and detached, you know?
Yeah.
And the dad, he's sort of like enjoying the process, you know? He's like, so I think the mom was the only one that was more like dragged along. Like she was like, why are we doing this stuff?
I think that's just, what's her Keeler? What's her name?
Catherine Keener.
I think Keener.
Yeah.
I think that's just kind of her
acting.
Way of acting.
Could be.
Another plot problem is why not just eliminate his phone as soon as he got there?
They unplugged it?
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? Like,
well, because he'd freak out. Where's my phone?
But there could have been ways. Like Rose could have taken it and dropped it in the toilet on accident.
Right.
Or they could have just taken it, and then he'd been like, where's my phone? And, right. and they were like, oh, I don't know. And then, because he was calling his friend.
Right, giving him updates.
Right, and he was taking pictures of Andre and other people. Right. Like, that was a major liability.
That's true.
And again, this is like at least the 20th time they've done this. You'd think other guys would have, you know, like, you could run and bring your phone with you and, like, call the cops.
That's right. I'm fixing their issues with logic, but I do get this sense of, like, they are so sure of themselves.
Yeah.
So they're almost doing it right out in the open.
All the other things make sense, but the cell phone thing, that because you can be so sure of yourself and still recognize if the cops come by here, we're screwed.
Especially considering if they knew that a flash can trigger someone to snap out of it.
Right.
That's a problem.
Right. Yeah. The other thing is, like, why did they even bring Andre to that party? He didn't need to be there. You know what I mean?
The guy
that the Flash
messed with. Right, like, don't like, come to the party.
Like, why? Yeah, what? He doesn't... They're not there to bid on him because they already have
a guy.
So why is he even there? Again, he needs to be there for the story.
Yeah.
But... It doesn't make a lot of logical sense.
I'm the public defender here. I totally agree with you, but in the public defender's eyes, he's their friend. Of course he comes to the annual party.
Yeah.
They've been friends for years.
Right. But where are all the other friends? Because she abducted, they've all abducted
of
tens of people. Where are all them?
They had unfortunate accidents. Had to
yeah.
Remember, they also had a lot of, the first operations didn't work at all.
Yeah.
I'm making that up.
The other scene, and maybe you can tell me why this is, but when the grandfather is creepily running straight at Chris, straight, and then takes a total right angle turn.
Which, by the way, have you heard that that's now a thing? People are filming themselves trying to recreate that.
That's funny. But, like, I know that that was the grandfather.
He was a runner.
He was a runner. But,
and so I get the part that makes sense is he's getting to enjoy this powerful body and running in it when he was already old.
Yeah.
He couldn't run anymore.
But why is he running in the middle of the night straight at Chris and then does a right angle instead of like, oh, hey, Chris, how's it going? Or
if they wanted to be subtle, that was not the way to do it.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, if I, like, I was surprised Chris didn't punch him in the face or run. If someone, honestly, if someone did that to me, I'd be like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Right.
You know what I mean? That was
it.
He was threatening me.
He's running straight at me.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Like, get me out of here. You know, like, again, you needed to have that scene because it needed to be weird and creepy and get your heart going. And but at the same time,
you're right.
Like,
okay.
What is his motivation
at that point? It's so funny. Like, that's why I was saying that I think if you watch it again, maybe the score drops a bit, because in that first viewing, it was sort of like when we watch Rogue One. That first one shot, it's like amazing, and you don't really think about all these issues.
Yeah, and then the second time you watch it, you're like, oh,
that's good.
Yeah, yeah. Also, and another kind of plot problem was at the very end when he is being, the grandpa black guy is on top of him, and he takes his phone out and he does a flash to get, wouldn't Rose have seen that and then not given him, because he stands up and says, give me the gun, I'm going to shoot him.
Yeah, I'll do it.
And then he gets the gun and shoots her.
Right.
So wouldn't she at least be suspicious of this guy? Because they all knew that flash photography does this.
Yep.
So why didn't she, they're in the pitch black of the night, she would have seen the flash. So it's like, at the very least, she would have been like, nah, I'm going to pass on giving you the gun. I think I'll shoot him. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so I thought,
or she would have just shot him and be like, oh, whoops, sorry. I was already in the process of shooting him.
Right. Like, that was a bit of a problem too.
Yeah.
Little convenient, you know? But like I said, I like this movie, 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
And even with these problems, it's not a big deal. And whenever you have a twisty movie like this, that has a ton of suspense and like a Twilight Zone feel to it, you have to do certain things to make the movie go fast.
Mm-hmm.
And also, because the whole idea is things get twisty and you don't know where you're at. You know, you got grandpa running straight at you and you're like, what's going on? And it's supposed to throw you off the scent and give you this creepy feeling. And so,
right,
like I said, as I was watching it, I was totally into it. But then later on, I thought back and I was like, why was he running straight at him? Like,
yeah.
That doesn't mean, you know. Other things that I could say is I thought it was cool how the final black guy stood up for Chris and shot Rose.
Right.
Again, just really nailing home that, you know, these white people need to be put down.
That's right. Now, I was a little confused as to why the only way out for was to kill himself. You would have, I guess maybe he's like, I'm a abomination, half brain and blah, you know, maybe that was it.
Well, he's in the deep place.
But he was in control at that point.
But he only comes out every now and then. So he's an eternity in the
deep place.
Whatever they called it, you know.
As a passenger. Which, by the way, that is a very fascinating part of this, which is sort of this concept of you could imagine a brain having more than one consciousness, like in the case of multiple personalities or things like that. But you could imagine having some conscience piece that can't communicate with the other conscious piece and be observing without being able to act.
Yeah.
And then when we think about that, we actually already have that in a way, because we have those little voices we have in our head, like, oh, I really shouldn't eat this thing. I really shouldn't buy that thing. Or why am I going to this party? Or I shouldn't do, you know, all these kind of things. And then the other voice comes in and overrules and like does it. You almost already have a little bit of that dynamic happening. It's just not a fully formed person with a name and a story. It's more like aspects of ourselves that are locked away sometimes.
Sure.
That was fascinating.
The scene with the grandmother when she's like, no, no,
yeah,
no, 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 no,
no, no.
That scene was so amazing.
And she, because she was so creepy in those moments.
Yeah, but creepy, but also the acting was amazing.
Really
and
great.
The writing for it was amazing. I mean, it was,
she's got that smile, like,
like there's such a confluence of emotion,
and you get that little tear
that's happening in that moment, right?
Yep.
It was so interesting. All right. Bottom line, I'm super glad this movie was made.
Yep.
That's why we're... I mean, there's a ton of movies that you and I see.
Yep.
I really wanted to make an episode about this movie because it's such an important movie.
So good.
For our time. I'm super glad that people like this movie and are seeing it.
Right.
I think that's a very good sign that it's popular. You know, through entertainment, you know, this movie is an entertaining movie.
By the way, has there been backlash about it?
I'm sure, but I haven't heard
of it. I haven't heard of it.
Through this entertaining movie, this movie will likely provide another incremental step towards social justice in our overall effort to erase or account for racism and make this a more equal and just society. Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us out there. Please take care of yourself and get out because
you are brainwashed.